Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.
Welcome to Screen Talk. I have yet another post-Eric Cohn paternity leave addition to the podcast. Please welcome our fabulous film editor, Kate Erbland. Hello, Kate.
And it's not, it's like right in the middle of Eric Cohn paternity leave.
He's still on it. Yes, he hasn't stopped it yet.
Although I see him, he's around. He was at Nightmare Alley last night. Yes, he is.
The First Order of Business is one of the earliest award groups has weighed in with actual winners, right? The Gotham Awards. Yes. And you attended. Tell me what it was like.
Well, not only did I attend, I was on one of the nomination committees for Breakthrough Director, which is first time directors. It was a wonderful batch. I was very pleased with them. And I attended. It felt kind of like being back there in 2019. You know, they do it at Cipriani on Wall Street. There's a wonderful cocktail hour beforehand where everyone can mix and mingle, and sort of a boisterous, often too long dinner where they announce the winners. They do all these tributes. It felt really normal, which means a lot of the time it felt abnormal because you start thinking about it and you're like, wait, no, I haven't done this for a while. But it was really great. I really enjoyed it. I think everyone was happy to be back together. They had a lot of great protocols in place so that I think people felt really safe. It was really enjoyable. It really felt like the kickoff for award season.
What were some of the highlights in terms of presentations and you know, speeches? Anybody make a memorable presentation?
Well, yeah, I mean, the tributes are always wonderful. Ethan Hawke, oh my God, I don't even remember who he was in. Oh, Peter Dinklage. Ethan Hawke did the Peter Dinklage tribute. And it was wonderful and funny and very personal. He quoted Walt Whitman. He went through Peter Dinklage's entire career, their relationship. And I think everyone really enjoyed that. But Ethan is always, you know, if you've never seen Ethan speak in person, you're missing out. And I think we all enjoyed that. I was seated at the Magnolia Pictures table and their founder, Eamon Bowles, was being feted and tributed. And he is not, he doesn't really like public speaking, but he gave a wonderful speech. And that was fun. And, you know, they were all really excited for him. And so I cheered just as much as they did. I promised to be an honorary Magnolia person that night. I think that I fulfilled that. That was all wonderful. And then Reservation Dogs, when Reservation Dogs won for, I believe it was Breakthrough Series over 40 minutes, the creator Sterling Hojo gave a rousing, you know, very interesting speech about the history of Wall Street in terms of the Native American population and things that had been done to them in the very early days of Manhattan, which was somehow both really funny and depressing, which seems sort of in keeping with his show. And I think everyone really enjoyed that. And I think a lot of people probably walked away thinking, I want to watch that.
So if we start out with Best Feature, up against the eventual winner were The Green Knight, Passing, Pig, and Test Pattern. And I would say, and the winner is The Lost Daughter. People tend to make a lot of the Gothams because they are such an early award show. But at the same time, if you think about it, in terms of, you know, what you're talking about, the committees that vote on it, Eric and I debate this every year. Eric wants to say the Gothams are so influential. And in fact, they put some titles in that maybe people will check out. But how many people pay attention to the Gothams? You see a trade story. Maybe you don't watch the streaming thing. So what does happen is that something like The Lost Daughter gets an extra push, especially since it dominated. It dominated the night, winning Maggie Gyllenhaal for Best Actress. Listen to me. I'm used to having her be an actress. She's obviously a director for the Brigham Ray Breakthrough Director Award. And then lead performance, which was gender-free this year for the first time, was Olivia Colman. So what do you think the impact of the Gothams really is on the overall awards process?
I mean, I certainly don't think it's as impactful as I guess Eric seems to think. I think one thing that's interesting is that, you know, like the Indie Spirits, there is a limit to how much to the budget of a film. So you'll be like, oh, why was
35
Power?
million.
Yeah. People are like, oh, you know, everyone's talking about Power of the Dog. Why wasn't that there? Jane Campion didn't get a tribute, but the film didn't qualify for any of these other awards. So something like The Lost Daughter, which has always had good buzz, is not yet out. Definitely needs a little shove. I think this is going to give it. People are going to think, oh, well, you know, good performance, good film, good director. Maybe not even realizing Maggie Gyllenhaal is now a director. So it'll get like a little push, but I don't think it's all of a sudden. Certainly The Last Daughter is not all of a sudden like a major best picture contender. I don't think, you know, the general shape of the race has changed so much after Monday.
It might give a lift to Olivia Colman, but that best actress race is so competitive. And only more so, you know, now that Nicole Kidman is getting in there. You know, I wanted to hope for Penelope Cruz because she's so great in Parallel Mothers, but she may not make it now. It's packed. So best documentary feature, Ascension, Faya Day, President, and Summer of Soul succumbed to Flea. Which is definitely getting a lot of attention and is going to make it somewhere in some category, whether it's documentary or Denmark's Oscar submission.
Or animated.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't think so, but it's still...
Well, Elspeth Bashir did not get in there. It's sort of that's the model for this. The shorts and animation branch is very particular about what they consider to be
singular.
Good animation.
They're a little different.
And then best international. On the other hand, I would say that Summer of Soul is likely to be the documentary front runner as we head toward the shortlist voting. But these are some of the titles that'll end up on that shortlist. And then we have international feature. I was thrilled with the winner, Drive My Car. Thrilled. It's like my favorite movie
wonderful
of
category.
The year. Up against Power of the Dog.
Well, I mean, I'm also like, obviously there's a lot of affection at IndieWire for Drive My Car. And I think there's also a lot of affection for Worst Person in the World, which was in the mix. And they were there looking, you know, wonderful and very
gorgeous.
Excited. Yeah, gorgeous. So, you know, that's exciting to see them in the mix. I wasn't surprised by that win, but I think the room felt very excited by it.
I don't know if Maggie Gyllenhaal is going to wind up in the best director race. That's just too tough to get into the top five at the Oscars. There's too many big names. Campion will get in for sure.
I mean, and, you know, there's still some retrograde thinking about, oh, you know, we'll have one woman, maybe we'll have two women again this time. Wow. And pushing past that seems, unfortunately, not something that's going to happen this year, maybe for the next few years.
Well, you know, Nomadland, Chloe Zhao, her directing acumen was so obvious and so extraordinary. And she did things that other people had never done before. You couldn't deny the directing skill involved in that film. Whereas, you know, Lost Daughter is very well done and it is a great debut, but it is on a smaller scale. That's the problem. You need a movie to have some scale and scope to it.
Well, and it has so many wonderful performances. I think a lot of people are taken by the performances and maybe not paying as much attention to what Maggie is doing behind the camera.
And maybe the screenplay would win. You know, there are two categories for screenplay, so you get a chance of that. And then we have the screenplay category, which she won. So that helps her.
Yeah, no, that's one of the few things where it's like, yes, I can see that actually helping and maybe happening. And as you mentioned, there's, you know, two categories at the Oscars. It's a much bigger field that she can break into there.
The winner for supporting performance was Troy Kotsur in Coda. Now, that is something where I think critics groups could really help push him into contention. And I am talking to people on the circuit who are seeing Coda, catching up with it. It's playing very well.
Yes.
With the Academy. It's a perfect soft lob down the middle for the Academy.
I mean, they've been doing a ton of screenings and Q&As. I had lunch with Emilia Jones on Monday before the Gothams. They're all back together. They're traveling to London to do stuff there. They all love each other. They're all going to talk up each other. I think there really is real love there. And I think a lot of people didn't see it when it was, you know, it was in limited theaters. I think people are still navigating Apple TV Plus and what that means. And I hope that Coda comes back around, because I think it's a really lovely film. And I think there's a lot of lovely, interesting stuff at play within it.
I would say screenplay would be should be a contender. I don't know whether it will be. And then the other, Marley Maitland seems like an obvious Academy play as well. But that's also a very competitive category.
Yes.
And then I'm worried about Ruth Negga in Passing, who I think gives one of the great performances, but I can sort of feel that movie not gaining the traction that it needs.
I mean, I love Passing so much. I loved it so much at Sundance. And then you could sort of see the attention dip over the summer. And then it came back at New York Film Festival and had a slightly different cut that was even better. There seemed to be like a big affection for both Ruth and Tessa Thompson immediately after New York Film Festival. But yeah, it does seem to have dipped. And I think the problem is that they're both wonderful in it. And I think people sort of get confused. Who's the lead? Who's supporting? Although I think it's easy to say Tessa is lead and Ruth is supporting, because it's through Tessa's eyes.
So.
But I
yeah.
think that there's still some confusion where it's like, oh, the two leads are women. What to do with that? Which is its own problem.
Oh, man. And then breakthrough performer Amelia Jones. She's fantastic. I just don't see her able to break in
it's
to
a
the big
very,
leagues in this case.
Yeah. I mean, and she's still young, and I think she's someone, it will happen for her eventually. I think she's lovely and very talented. She had to learn so many things for Coda. Like, obviously she had to learn sign language, but people don't realize she had to learn how to sing, and she also had to learn how to fish. Like, there is nothing fake there. She learned it all. And I think, but she seemed, you know, when we had lunch on Monday, it's, you know, 2 years away from filming it, and she's still delighted and excited to talk about these things. And so I think there's only more good stuff to come for her.
So today, as we're recording, we decided to get out ahead of the National Board of Review. We'll catch up with that next week. But that's another idiosyncratic group of a small group. They don't really reflect the Academy voters or the critics, really.
Yeah.
They just get another group of titles out, you know, to be considered, really, right?
Yes. And, you know, they always have, I feel like you can pick out what's going to be an NBR title, but there's always going to be a couple that you're like, I don't know. They always seem to love Warner Brothers titles. Maybe they're going to go crazy for Dune. I've been hearing that percolating. But like you said, I mean, most of these people are not people who are in the business. We're not mingling with these people at events and asking them and trying to get a gauge on these things. So I don't know. The only thought I have is Dune. Just go nuts for Dune.
Well, sometimes they have a little bit of, I don't know, the word I want to use is civic pride. You know, they go for the socio-economic, you know, liberal movie. I would say, if you like, King Richard would feel like a movie that they would go for. And then we'll see about that. What they end up doing. And then we have your group, the New York Film Critics Group, which is voting Friday,
starting at 9 a.m. at Lincoln Center.
I mean, you're more in touch with the critics in New York. This is the New York group. Yep. And again, influential, very, very influential. But remember, they are not the same as the Academy.
Right. And I mean, I think especially when it comes to performance in the supporting categories in particular, sometimes we have a little more out there picks. We have people we want to
Tiffany
bolster.
Haddish.
Tiffany Haddish is the gold standard.
Eric's fave.
That everyone still talks about. And so I feel like there could be something there. I know that obviously The Power of the Dog has a lot of affection amongst the New York film critics.
I would be shocked if they don't give it a few things.
So I think that there'll be a few things there. But I think there could always be some surprises. I think, you know, we have some wonderful categories. I love that we do best first film. There's a lot of possibilities there. It could be more like the Gothams, where it's films that, you know, people in LA might not have heard of, because it's people that
Sean Heder could be get in there for that. Yeah.
No, she was she did Tallulah.
Oh, that's right. This is her second film.
But but I mean, we could get Maggie in there. We can get Rebecca Hall in there. Shatara Michelle Ford for Test Pattern, which is a film that I love a lot, that got a lot of attention at Gotham's and I think has mostly been seen by New York critics. So I'm excited about it. I make no claim to know what everyone else is thinking, but I do think, you don't need to go much further than Twitter to see how much the New York critics love Power the Dog.
Tragedy of Macbeth could use some help from the critics. That's an interesting case of something that played at New York Film Festival, obviously opening night, Joel Coen, sort of storied filmmaker, but needs a little lift.
I think that they've been struggling to get screenings going. I got an email this morning. They're like, Kate, are you around today? We're probably going to do a screening around 2 if you want to come. And I was like, oh, I'm pretty busy. And they're like, we might be able to get you a link. So I think that you might see, if you follow a lot of New York Film Critics Circle members on Letterboxd, maybe you're going to see a lot of diary entries popping up this evening for Tragedy of Macbeth, anyone who didn't see it at New York Film Festival. But, we've been getting a lot of these links kind of late. I know that people
That
want
seems crazy. Well,
it is
Netflix has a
crazy.
million things. No, that's not Netflix. Tragedy of Macbeth is
Is
obviously Apple, yeah,
yes.
and Amazon and A24, right?
A24. But yeah, but just like, people sort of hoping to be the last thing that you see. And so you're excited about it. But if everyone is sending you the links and the screening invites last minute, some of that stuff isn't going to be seen. And obviously it is our duty if we're voting to see as much stuff as we can. But I don't know. It's always like if people send links right before Thanksgiving, I think that is the sweet spot because you've got a few
You
days
have some
off
time
and
at home.
you're going to,
Yeah.
yeah. Yep.
Yep. No, it was fun. I have to say, King Richard, anecdotally, just in terms of people watching things over Thanksgiving and talking about it, that's playing well for people. And it's not only my family, right, but
Right.
Academy members. Some people, I get a range of responses to Belfast, a range of responses to Dune, a lot of it dependent on whether you're a sci-fi fan or
Right.
not, right? Whether you go into that world with an open mind. Everyone seems to like King Richard,
It's
honestly.
true. And I mean, everyone sort of complained about or bemoaned the box office take on it. But I think that that is a case of a film that a lot of people watched at home with their families. And, you could watch it on
Kind of
HBO
designed
Max.
that
Why wouldn't
way.
you? Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly. So.
absolutely. No, well, that brings there's a story on the site today by Chris Lindahl about how to measure success. Speaking of Eamon Bowles, I had a conversation with him at the New York Film Festival, where he said that he used to, you used to look at your spreadsheets in the morning after the weekend, and you'd see where all the, or at the end of the month, to see where all the revenue came in from on your individual movie. He used to have six or seven, something like that, different venues for revenue. Now there's like 35. And that's sort of what Chris's piece reveals, is that there's multiple platforms, multiple revenue sources. Movies are playing all over the place.
And there's multiple ways to determine how popular something is. I mean, obviously, social media has been one of those for a long time, but it's like if you're getting a ton of play on social media, how do you measure that in terms of success and reach?
That's true. And that's the new normal, is measuring reach, measuring engagement. Box office is no longer as important. Now, you don't get the lift for King Richard of being a box office hit, but it may not matter anymore
I mean,
as
I
much as
think,
we think.
I don't think it matters as much anymore. I think, especially in a couple of years, it's really not going to. Yeah, it's still great to say, oh, our movie was number one at the box office. Our movie made $100 million, but that went out of fashion pretty quickly because it had to. So,
But Dune, you could
Dune.
claim, was a box office hit, and that helps that movie. In fact, all right. And then we have our. Here's where we are. We're going to talk about the two new movies of the year. So let's start
Agreed.
with your take on Nightmare Alley.
Oh gosh. So I saw Nightmare Alley last night at 8 o'clock at Alice Tully. Pretty much everyone was there. I know Cate Blanchett zoomed in from London afterwards for a
Giant
Q&A.
scale hovering over the whole.
I think here's my thinking. It's like two different films. You have the first more than act. Like an elongated first act where you see Bradley Cooper coming into this circus carnival world and realizing how he may be able to apply his talents in a sort of mystical way, but not really. It's just more con man stuff. And then the second half, when Cate Blanchett shows up, he's fully steeped in this world. He's become a very different person. And I really like this. I appreciate and admire the second half more. I wish it was more like the second half. I think the second half has a lot more momentum. It's much more brutal. It's when it gets kind of gruesome. And I wish it was more like the second half.
Interesting. Okay, so I would say that the what I loved about the beginning of the movie is that you're introduced to this character in a mysterious way. You don't you 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 think he maybe killed someone, but you don't know why or how or to what degree he was villainous in so doing. How much he seems to be carrying a lot of guilt, and doesn't think very highly of himself. And he's a bit of a cipher, and you watch him blossom in the Carney universe and gain all these skills. And he's involved with Toni Collette and David Strathairn and Willem Dafoe. These are, the people, and he falls for, of course, Rooney Mara, and pulls her into his orbit. So you watch his growth with some fascination, still not knowing if he's a good guy or a bad guy. And then there's this amazing shot. I mean, the world that Del Toro creates is so beautiful, and the camera work and the set design and all of that. So you can assume that the Oscars are going to be humming the sets on this one, the
Yeah, I mean,
crafts.
the crafts are superior. You
The
never doubt.
cinematography. Yeah, no, he's just a master filmmaker. So there's this extraordinary, right in the middle of the movie, as you say, there's this extraordinary, the movie is cut in half, and there's this extraordinary crane shot that's coming back as this car is leaving the carnival in the rear view. Very small, it's reducing. And he and Rooney Mara, I'm giving a little bit away right now, forgive me. But the second half is a whole different movie. You're right. And much more brutal and intense, and everyone's venal except Rooney Mara.
Well, I mean, I keep seeing people talking about how, like, this is some great moral tale, and I think it's not. I think it's mostly populated with a lot of not good people who do not good things, and more not good things happen to them. Rooney, as you say, her character Molly is the only one who seems to have any innocence left,
Or a
and
moral compass.
yes, or a moral compass that everyone else sort of gets slowly chipped away at as the film goes on, even though there are some people we meet in it who do not have a moral compass when we meet them. But I
Richard
think,
Jenkins is very good, also, and Blanchett is great. The set of
yes.
her office is to
Oh
die for.
my God, it's
It is
stunning. All
this
that
Art
wood.
Deco thing. Oh my God,
Yeah, gorgeous.
stunning. Yeah, blonde. Del Toro was on a press conference this morning, and he described it as a sort of Rorschach test, all the way that the designs of her office. So he goes to town with the look and feel. But let's be honest, this is a dark noir of bleak proportions, which is going to play for a small audience, I think, even if Del Toro commands a huge following among cinephiles. They will go to see it in theaters.
Yeah,
Fox
I mean,
Searchlight, so it's a theater play.
it's not a feel-good film, even though I think it ends on the sort of deliciously dark, horrible note that I wish we saw more of, that just bleak humor,
Well, if
which
you remember the first movie, you do remember where it's going to end, and that was haunting me throughout.
Right, although he and Kim Morgan have made some changes to exactly that. But yes, if you've seen the original, you have a pretty good idea of where it will end.
So Guillermo del Toro and Kim Morgan, over the course of the past few years, have become a couple, and now they're married,
Now they're
right?
married, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what we
So, and
read. We read
they
that.
wrote the yes, we printed that, published that, and we so they wrote this together. And so she was going on about the she's a very erudite, scholarly, not no she knows a lot about movies, in a way that he probably indeed appreciates. So then we have West Side Story. Oh wait, but Bradley Cooper. Bradley Cooper. We had heard a lot about what a deep dive he took in the course of discovering this character and this performance. And it is a complicated character, and it is a complicated performance. And he's very good at the same time that I don't, he's such a terribly unlikable guy that I can't imagine he's going to beat out all the other actors for Best Actor nominations.
And I feel like Bradley Cooper is getting to this level where it's like he's so good, it's sort of working against himself. Like, it's Bradley Cooper, of course he's going to be really good. And you know, when you watch Wedding Crashers, I don't think you would have thought that, although he was hilarious in Wedding Crashers, but he is already at such a high level all the time that, you know, it feels like something has to be really big and huge and deep to say, like, oh, well, this is something that deserves more attention than it would get already. And I think, yeah, he's good in it, but it's a tough character. He's not someone that you root for. And again, it's another very crowded field. So I would be very surprised if he broke through.
And it only leads me back. I did write about Simon Rex this week
Yes, you did.
for Red Rocket, and it leads me back to what he accomplishes in that movie. You could argue that he plays a terrible character, a guy who just does everything wrong, and you know from the beginning of the movie who he is somehow, and he does. But you're rooting for him to
Right.
be redeemed. You're rooting for him to find his best self, and not go down the road. And that doesn't happen here with Bradley's
No,
character.
it's funny that you say you're
Stan.
rooting for him. Yes, Stan Carlisle. You're rooting for him to be his, with Simon's character in Red Rocket, you're rooting for him to be his best self and to get better. And I think there's never a moment in Nightmare Alley where you feel that way about Stan, because, like, you know, he's not going to become a good person. He's not going to tap into whatever good he has. There are brief moments and you think, okay, maybe, but it's just like, I think it's very clear from the beginning, like, it's not that kind of film. Like, there's not a lot of redemption here for
He's an
people.
empty hole that needs to be filled and will never be filled. Yeah, he's one of those guys. All right, West Side Story.
I know.
So let's go, Kate.
Well, I mean, Monday night was a huge night in New York City. It was like you had to choose between going to the Gothams or going to the West Side Story premiere, which was, you know, a very hard choice. My own home was split over it. I went to the Gothams. My longtime partner, Mike Ryan from Up Rocks, went to West Side Story. He went to the premiere. It was at Jazz Lincoln Center. It was fantastic. Everyone got to watch the red carpet beforehand. You could just tell, even just like the pictures he was sending me, you could see the energy and the electricity on the red carpet, where, you know, that can be sort of a ugh. And then afterwards, you know, reading at the Gothams, all these responses, everyone's so excited. I was so thrilled. I don't know. I don't think you can doubt Spielberg, but I think that, you know, there's so many remakes and requels and reimaginings out there. It's okay to wonder, well, why? Why are you taking this on? And Spielberg has said he's loved the film his entire life. He grew up on it, but I wondered, well, then why do you want to redo it? And then on Tuesday morning, when I went to go see it, I was like, oh, I get it. Yes, I, you know, no problems here. Like, the changes that he and Kushner made, and not just in
Tony
terms, yeah,
Kushner, yeah,
Tony Kushner,
who's his
not,
frequent
yes,
collaborator.
yeah, not just in terms of where certain numbers are showing up. It's been reordered. It looks a lot more like the Broadway show,
That's
not
right.
the original film. In terms of casting, some of the choices he makes, like one that people have been talking about a lot, is that there are many scenes that are in Spanish or Spanglish that are not subtitled. If people want to complain about that, I think that's silly because his actors are so fantastic that you get
You know
what they're
exactly
saying.
what's
You know
going
exactly
on.
what's going on. And it just felt so vital and fresh. And what everyone's been saying, like, they can't believe that Spielberg hasn't done a musical before, because the staging of it, just like the song and dance of it alone, is dazzling. I was dazzled, and I haven't been dazzled in a while. Got a
And your
cat
cat
coming.
tail is in the
It's his name's Oscar, so
Hello, Oscar. He's dressed for
I know. We have two tuxedo
the
cats, so they're both always ready for anything, Oscar.
Oscars. So, all right, I loved it too. I loved it too. I found the beginning just slightly awkward. That happens with a lot of musicals where the filmmaker is establishing the rules and the world, and you have to just sort of enter it. The idea that they would take the raising of Lincoln Center, the raising of the neighborhood that became Lincoln Center, the slums that were destroyed. That landscape is brilliant. I thought that was a brilliant concept.
It's like you're
and it really
a
was
musical.
The, true to the period.
Yeah, it's like you're watching a musical at the end of the world.
Yeah.
Even though there is still all of this joy and, of course, pain in it. And I love that. I love every time we see Doc's Pharmacy and it's like the only thing left standing, which, you know,
it looks like the
really
rubble
works.
Of World War II or
yeah,
something.
It does.
You know?
It does.
So there's a real sort of destroyed landscape that the jets and the sharks are running through. And for all the, you know, fully charged masculinity of the choreography and all the men dancing, which is, of course, wonderful to watch. And the music is sublime. This is the great, great score and Sondheim songs and Bernstein music and you know, Dudamel conducting the orchestra. You know, it is just the sound where I saw it was just sublime. And I hope you can see it in whatever, you know, fabulous big theater Dolby-ish way that you can. So you can't. What's great about the classic original, the 61 movie, is the music and the choreography and the singing. What's wrong with it is the casting. And, you know, the old, you know, I'm a big Natalie Wood fan, but she wasn't Hispanic and she couldn't sing as well as Marnie Nixon, who they dubbed in. And so in this case,
even though she so desperately wanted to sing, which is always so sad to think about.
So Rachel Zegler is great. The newcomer, the discovery, yeah. She sings like a bird. She's actually a great actress as well. Yes. She's a good Maria. Anson Elgort, he's fantastic. He's actually very good. But
me,
the women
like the one,
dominate.
Like, yeah,
he's
the
okay.
women dominate.
He's better
okay.
than Belmer was, Richard. I mean, he's much
yes.
better.
Yeah, but it just like, I think-
That's
you
a
know,
bad,
think,
I mean, that's, anyone would be, yeah.
Well, I mean, the point I think that David Ehrlich made this in his review is just like, you know, when you have Steven Spielberg is like the top line name on your movie poster, on your credits, you can get all kinds of people. And as we can see, I mean, Steven Spielberg cast a lot of people that are not known, at least not known in the movies, for all these other roles. And so I sort of wish he had done that same thing for the Tony role. I don't think it doesn't ruin the film, but I just kept thinking, oh, there has to be someone who could be better
he can
at this.
Sing. He's a good actor.
He certainly knows how to move.
He's good
That's
looking.
What everyone was saying.
No, he's
so.
A good. No, he's a good yeah. dancer. He's very good, and the others are great. But okay, let's say who the people who dominate this movie. Ariana DeBose. Again, yeah. Anita. Anita is the best role yes. in the movie, yeah. and she could follow Rita Moreno and get another supporting actress nomination. It's just the heart of the movie. It's the most important role, and she's great
yeah.
in it. And so I think she gets a slot right there. That's where Ruth Negga lost her slot, I'm afraid. And then you have Rita Moreno herself, who isn't that great in some of the talky scenes with Elgort, but because there's some scenes in there that are kind of fakey, you know, like in the
yes.
store.
Yeah.
It doesn't ring true, but there's an she's very good in many of the scenes, and then she gets to sing somewhere and it kills,
right.
just kills. The whole house was crying, including
yeah.
me.
Oh yeah, that's when I started crying, and I took our Jude Dry with us, and Jude was also like stifling for even more scenes than I was, but I think that's the scene where we both started.
Jude is a great singer and can you know sing anything from any musical. I've been to Marie's Crisis with Jude, and I was sorry to miss the Sondheim tribute.
Oh,
at
yeah.
Marie's Crisis, you know that's my fave.
Well, I was so taken with Riff with Mike Faced. I was
very
blown
good.
Away by this performance. Jude mentioned that he has sort of a big knicky energy, sort of like this ugly, handsome, scary, but you want to see him in
he
every
has swagger.
Thing.
He has a
he
lot
has
of swagger.
Swagger.
But he's also a damaged guy. I would argue that
yes.
Kushner and Spielberg added depth to every one of these characters.
Yes.
Except possibly Tony.
Yes. I mean,
well,
you know,
Tony and Maria have no depth because they're like 5 years old. There's
right.
nothing.
Exactly. And the
I'm
rest
kidding.
Of the jets and the sharks have, you know, they've all been through a lot of stuff and they're in the middle of a horrible thing. And we see them plunging deeper into what's going on with, you know, their lives. And then specifically, of course, what's going on with Tony and Maria, who are hugely important figures to both of these groups.
I'm going to take that back. I don't think they're shallow. I would say that even Tony and Maria are deeper than the original. There's
yes.
more going
oh, yes.
on with both
yeah.
of them. And that's what's, to go back to what we started with, that's how Spielberg and Kushner have improved on the original and have just enriched it, put it into a really good, enriched it with a proper context mm-hmm. And so the songs, the way they play out dramatically, by the time you get to the end, you are totally engaged with this. And
yeah,
it's
and you're
very
totally
upsetting.
Devastated. Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, yes.
It really works. So it's well, this
think,
movie is now at the front of the Best Picture
yeah.
race. And
yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah, Spielberg no, and Kushner and all of the above. There's an amazing story by A.O. Scott in the Sunday New York Times
yeah.
That I do recommend if you haven't caught up with it yet, where he really gives you the full picture of Tony Kushner. Not as much detail about West Side Story as I might have liked.
Right. Although
but
there is a very
that
funny
later.
There's a very funny Spielberg cameo in this story, which I thought was funny. Scott and Kushner are sitting on a bench and they're talking and they hear someone go, "Oh, there's Tony." And they both go by Tony. Obviously A.O. Scott is the byline, but he goes by Tony and they both turn. Who is it? And it's Spielberg and Kate Capshaw.
And Kate Capshaw.
Who of course, yes. I mean, Tony Scott speaks to him later for the piece, but it's just like, it's sort of like, this is Tony Kushner's New York where Steven Spielberg can just stroll by and want to talk
they're sitting on a park bench in the, in Central Park.
Yeah.
Well, it was the title of the story was something like Tony Kushner's West Side, you know,
right.
his New York. Well, anyway, that's our podcast for this week. Thank you, Kate.
Oh, and thanks for having me, and I guess Oscar as well.